Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Today is July the 4th, and we are in Rus in the second parak, chapter 2, and we're up to Pasuk Beis, verse 2. So we pointed out last time that the first Pasuk in Parak Beis introduces Boaz, despite the fact that in the story he doesn't come up yet. And which is a funny kind of method for the Navi to use. It's not such a common thing that you find. You find it in contemporary writing, but in the Navi you don't usually see it this way. But Tomer Rus HaMoavia El Naomi. Rus the Moavia said to Naomi, Elcha Nahasadeh, I'll go to the field, Va'ala Katava Shivalim, and I'll collect stalks. Achar Asher Emtzachein Be'inav, after someone who I find favor in his eyes. And she told her, go, my daughter. So she's going to collect. This is what a poor person would do. As we know, there are three different matnos aniyim, gifts to the poor, that are left at the field. One is peah, that the owner of the field has to leave a corner of the field for the poor people. Another is shikha. Shikha is that which the owner of the field forgets when he is either harvesting or collecting his bundles. If he forgets to collect a certain bundle, or forgets to harvest a certain area of the standing grain and goes past it and doesn't see it or forgets about it, then the poor can take it. And then there is also leket. Leket is that when he is gathering his bundles, when he's gathering the wheat, if one or two stalks fall from the bundle, then that goes to the poor. If three or more fall, then that the owner can keep it, can pick it up again.
So why does she have to say
after someone who I find, right? So one possibility is that although that is the mitzvah, not everybody did it properly. This was a time, remember, that the famine had ended, but I imagine that food was still scarce. And it was something people had lost a lot of money during the famine, and it was not necessarily easy for a landowner whose grain had finally started to grow to give up everything. And it could be that there were those who were not happy with the poor people there. But we're going to see that Boaz is going to go out of his way for her, and it could be she meant that with someone with whom I'll be able to handle being out all day and collecting the sheaves of wheat.
Also, it says V'tomer Rus HaMoavia.
Yeah.
So it's trying to say that's why she's saying Asher Emtzachein Be'inav,
because she was a Moavia.
She was a foreigner.
Okay, that could be as well, that people wouldn't be so keen on having her there. She wasn't necessarily so liked. She went and she came and she collected in the field after the harvesters, and it happened for her, the portion of the field to Boaz, that was from the family of Elimelech. So it just so happened that she ended up at the field of Boaz. Obviously, we don't believe in coincidence. That's the way Hashem pushed her there, that she ended up at the field of Boaz. But she didn't know about the field of Boaz. It wasn't like she was looking for the field of Boaz. That is where she ended up. The Gemara, our sages, stop on the words Vatelech Vatavo. And she went and she came and she collected in the field. It's funny. You don't go and then return and then collect in the field. So Chazal tell us that the Medrash says that she was worried about losing her way. These fields were big fields, and one could easily get lost. And she went, and she marked her way, and then she returned so that she knew where she was going, and then she collected. But first she made sure she knew where she was going so she wouldn't lose her way. Remember, she's a foreigner. She doesn't know the area. And anyway, these places are very big. And in order to make sure she wouldn't get lost, she marked her way. I pointed out this year Shavuos time, that it appears to me that this is why would the Navi make this point for us? What difference does it make if she was careful to mark her way? Was just trying to show that she's someone who was careful not to get lost. Okay, I mean, why is that so significant? So it seems to me that the Navi is telling us that Rus was not a person who took risks. Rus was a person who was careful to make sure she knew where she was going before she went. She marked her way, she came back, she made sure she knew to know her directions before she went. So naturally she was a person who was not one to leap without looking. She was one to be very careful to know what she was doing. Yet, her entire life choice of following Nami was essentially leaping without knowing where she was going to end up. And it seems to me that Nami is trying to tell us that was completely against her grain. But because of her chesed, because of her kindness towards her mother-in-law, she was willing to do that which was completely against her natural way, which would have been to be very cautious and to check it out first. Go there, take a pilot trip, come back, think about it, that sort of thing. That's what she would naturally have done. But because of her chesed for her mother-in-law, she was willing to go against her natural way and to actually go and just throw everything away and follow her mother-in-law. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, V'nei Boaz, Bami Beis Lechem, behold, Boaz was coming from Beis Lechem. Vayomer lakotzrim, and he said to the harvesters, Hashem imachem, Hashem is with you. Vayomulo, and they responded to him, Yivarechecha, Hashem should bless you. Our sages tell us that Boaz established that a person should be shoel es chavero shalom b'shem, that he should use Hashem's name when asking shalom, when asking a person how they're doing. Shalom aleichem, and a person responds, Aleichem shalom, a person should use Hashem's name. He said to them, Hashem imachem, Hashem should be with you. They responded, Yivarechecha Hashem. They used Hashem's name when they greeted each other. This was Boaz was misakin this. Boaz established this as the Gadol Hador, as the great sage of the generation. Boaz and the head of the Beis Din, Boaz established this as the proper way to greet somebody using Hashem's name. And in fact, it is okay to do that. We don't like to do it. We don't like to be cavalier with Hashem's name. But in reality, it is okay to use Hashem's name in greeting a fellow Jew and in response to a greeting from a fellow Jew. Why did Boaz establish this? Why would Boaz have established using Hashem's name to greet someone and to respond to a greeting?
Maybe recognize the tone of him in each individual.
Okay, but why would he have established it as opposed to others before him and after him? What happened that Boaz would see the need to establish such a greeting?
He had suffered so much.
True.
People might think that he had something against Hashem.
Okay, that would explain why he himself would do it, but he established it for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He said Jews should use Hashem's name in greeting each other and responding to greetings.
But it shows Hakara Sefer also, in a way, because you're already counting that Hashem is the source of everything.
Okay, but that was true before Boaz.
Maybe because they had this pattern of being with Hashem and going away and just keep people cognizant of Hashem all the time.
Okay. Evidently, he felt it was necessary to make people aware of Hashem's presence all the time. What had happened recently that would necessitate that?
The famine.
The famine just happened. It was a 10-year famine. It decimated the Jewish people. Many, many people were killed. Many, many people suffered. And Boaz felt that it was important to establish Hashem in people's lives. Hashem imachem yivarechecha Hashem. Using Hashem's name, which is merciful, Hashem's name of mercy, and to understand that Hashem is always with us, even when things don't appear to be so good. Hashem is always there. Hashem imachem yivarechecha Hashem. And it should establish a sense of shalom amongst the people. Specifically, when you greet each other and when you respond to a greeting, Boaz tells the people, use Hashem's name. One has to be aware of the shalom that is between fellow Jews, which is coming from Hashem. A famine is a time when people become very stingy and very, very, unable to reach out to other people. There's a sense of kind of closing the ranks and, you know, taking care of your own when things are really, really bad.
Less charitable.
Very much less so. Much less so. Rashi writes this when the 7-year famine occurred in Egypt, that their eyes were very stingy towards each other, because when things aren't so good, it's very hard to be open hearted, have an open heart to other people. So he established Hashem's name. Yes.
We do this on a daily basis. We say, "How are you?" and people say, "Baruch Hashem."
That's true. They say, "Baruch Hashem." That's a good point.
Where is his field?
You mean because he's coming from Beis Lachem? It was near Beis Lachem. Beis Lachem is the city.
Okay.
So it would have been near. A sadeh, by definition, is a place where people don't live. Pesukei verse 5. Remember Boaz Lenaro. Boaz said to his lad, Hanitzav al HaKotzrim, that was in charge of the harvester, Lemi Hana'aro Hazos, to whom is this young lady? Referring to Rus. Who is this person? Chazal asked, would Boaz have normally asked about a woman?
No.
That was completely against what Boaz would normally have done. We have to put ourselves in the shoes of the people in those days, and especially the Gadol Hador Boaz. To ask about a woman would have been shocking. It's something which would never have happened. And for Boaz to have done it would have raised eyebrows. Why is he asking about a woman? It's v'chidarko shel Boaz l'shal b'nashim. Is it the way of Boaz to ask about women? Totally against what anybody would have expected. So Chazal say, because Boaz noticed in her chachma and tznius. He noticed in her wisdom, and he noticed in her modesty. He noticed in the way she conducted herself that she was very modest. And he also noticed, before that, with modesty, because when one is collecting things in a field, which involves ways of reaching down to get things, so she was very careful in how she did it so that it was in a modest way. Especially since he's in the middle of a field where there are a lot of men around. Most of the people in the field are going to be men. Certainly all the people working in the field are men. That's for sure. The only other women who may have been there would have been those who were attending the men, like bringing food out for the harvesters and like that, or other poor women who were there collecting. Otherwise, it would be mostly men. And even the collectors, if there was a man to collect, the man's the one that did it, not the woman. The Gemara tells us that we always, whenever there's a poor family, we always encourage the man to be the one to go looking for food or for money, and not the women, if at all possible. So it would have been rare indeed for women to be there as collectors, and certainly not working the field. So it was a mostly male area, and she conducted herself with tznius, with modesty, to be careful about that. And he also saw chachma, he saw wisdom. She knew the halacha. She knew only to collect the sheaves that fell, that were one or two, and not three. So she was aware of the halacha, which is remarkable, given the fact that she was relatively new to Yiddishkeit. She was still knowledgeable. So he wanted to know, who is this? Vayan hanar hanitzav al hakotzrim vayomar. So the lad who was in charge of the harvesters answered and said, Na'ara Moav Yahi, she is a Moabite woman. Hashava im Naomi miste Moav, who returned with Naomi from the fields of Moab. Vatomer, and she said, Alakatana, I will collect Vasafti Vamarim, and gather the bundles, Akare hakotzrim, after the harvesters. Vatavo, and she came, Vatamod, and she stood, Me'az Haboker Vat'ata, since the morning and until now. Zeh Shivto Habayis Ma'at, this sitting in the house, very little. The Malbim explains that they had like a makeshift hut there to get out of the sun, where a person could take a rest from their work. So apparently Boaz noticed her when she was there in that hut, and the Nar, the lad, is telling him she almost never went in there. She was primarily out in the field almost the entire day. Vayomer Boaz Orus, and Boaz said to Rus, Halo Shamat Biti, haven't you heard, my daughter? Al Tilchi Lil Kot B'Sada Acher, do not go and collect in another field. V'gamlo Savuri Mizeh, and do not turn from here. V'chosi D'Bakinim Na'rosai, and you should attach yourself to my young ladies. Now, the young ladies who are here of my own, the ones who are attending the harvesters, you should stick with them. Your eyes should be on the field that they harvest. You should go after them. I commanded the young men not to touch you, which means to leave you alone, not to bother you. And if you, when you become thirsty, v'halach nehakelim, you should go to the utensils. V'shasis me'asher yishabun ha'ni'arim, and you should drink from that which the young men have drawn. Now that was a big deal as well. They didn't have any running water. Where did the water come from in the middle of a wheat field? It had to be drawn from a well and then schlepped out to the field. The well wasn't in the middle of the wheat field. Mm-hmm. You had to go and schlep it out there, and then it was there. You had big buckets, and people used the water. So that was a commodity. And he tells her, "You can take water from there as well. Don't worry about it. And I've told my young men to leave you alone, to let you have the run of the place, and you'll be able to do that." So he's giving her a bunch of things over here. He's giving her companionship with the young ladies. He's giving her what to drink. He's telling her that no one is going to bother you. They understand that I've commanded them that to leave you alone and to let you go and collect as you wish. And I'm telling you, stay here. Don't go to another field. A poor person would go from field to field. You know, they don't want to overstay their welcome in one field, so they move on to another field. He says, "No, I want you to stay here, and you go after the harvesters. No one's going to bother you because of it." So this was a huge amount of chesed that he was extending to her, and she was not used to this. Until now, I mean, she hasn't been in Israel very long, but she is connected to Naomi, who has lost all of her money and is destitute, and people have not given her a second look. She's a Moabi woman. People aren't very happy with the Moabi people. And anyway, she's a poor lady. She doesn't have any family. Nobody was interested in her. And here Boaz extends to her all of this chesed. He made her feel very good. Pasuk Yud, verse 10. Vatipol al paneha, she fell on her face. Vatishtachu arsa, she bowed to the ground. She was overwhelmed. Vatomer 11, she said to him, Madua matzasi chen beinecha lahakireni. Why have I found favor in your eyes that you have recognized me? V'anochi nachrian, I am a foreigner. Vayan Boaz Vayomala, Boaz answered and said to her, Hugadli, it has been told to me, Kola Shahsisas Khamoseh, all that you did for your mother in law, Akare Mosi Sheikh, after your husband died. Now it wasn't told to him now. He heard this story, and now he's putting the face to the story, to the name. So I heard about everything you did for your mother in law, my cousin, Naomi. Vata'azvi avich v'imech, and you forsook your father and your mother, the eretz moladetech, and your land of your birth. Vatelchi al am asher yadat tmol shelshom, and you went to a nation that you did not know yesterday or the day before. Yishalem Hashem pa'aleich, Hashem should repay your deeds. You should be repaid by Hashem. Ustihima eskutech shleima me'im Hashem elokei Yisrael, and your wages should be complete from Hashem, the God of the Jews. Ashabas lachsos tachas kanafav, that you have come to take shelter under his wing.
Yeah.
Right. So he gives her a bracha that is the bracha for a ger, for someone who is a convert, that you have come to find shelter under the wing of Hashem, and Hashem should repay you and give you full wages. Vatomer, she said, Emsachein beinecha adoni ki nechamtani, I should find favor in your eyes, for you have consoled me. And you have spoken on the heart of your maidservant. And I shall not even be like one of your maidservants. I'm not even worthy like one of your maidservants. And you have taken care of me, and you have made me feel better. Boaz said to her at the time of the meal, of the food, Goshi halom. You should come close, meaning to the table. You should eat from the bread. So now he's even going to feed her a meal, which certainly was not generally done for the poor people. So he's extending to her that she can join the meal that was being served to the harvesters. You can eat from the bread, and you should dip your bread in vinegar. Chazal tell us from here that vinegar is good for the heat. That it's good to have vinegar in times of extreme heat. I assume it means outside. It probably has to do with water retention. You know, like they say, you're supposed to have water and also salt along with it. I assume vinegar has a similar property. So you should dip the bread in the vinegar. Vateshev mitzad hakotrim. She sat next to the harvesters. Vayitz bat la kali, and they extended to her. Kali kali is roasted grain. Vatochal vatispa, and she ate, and she was satiated. Vatosar, and she even had leftovers, which she will bring home to her mother-in-law. So they really took care of her at this meal. She got up to collect. And Boaz commanded his lad, saying, "Gam bein ha'amarim tzlakeit." Also between the bundles, let her collect. For lo sachlimua, do not shame her. This was evidently not normally done. It was not normally done that the poor would collect in between the rows of bundles. This may have been because it got in the way of the harvesters. It wasn't convenient for them to have someone in the way over there. The Malbim understands that it's because when they were between the bundles, apparently the bundles blocked they weren't easily seen, and the poor could take that which they really shouldn't be taking. They were able to sneak more than they would normally be allowed to take when they were hidden amongst the bundles. So he tells his lads that leave her alone and don't embarrass her. Let her do it. The gum, and now
she wasn't going to do that anyway.
No, she wouldn't have stolen, but they would have chased her away. Normally, they would chase away a poor person from that area. The gum sholta sholulaminat svasim. Not only that, but you should deliberately forget from the bundles. You should have more shikha, more forgetfulness than you normally would. Where you should pretend to leave it behind, so that way she can take it and it won't appear to her like you're giving her tzedakah. It will be just the Torah says I can take it. Vazavtem v'liketa, you should leave it and let her collect. V'lo sigaruva, do not rebuke her. Right, let her take. Vatilaket basade ad ha'arev, and she collected in the field until evening. Vatachbot es ha'sheliketa, and she, what does that mean? She lifted up? She bundled up? You mean
she gleaned
all that she beat out all that she collected. Vayehi ke'efas se'orim, and it was okay. It's not wheat. It's barley. It was like an ephah's worth of barley. That is a huge amount. She collected a huge amount, much much more than a poor person would normally get in one day. She lifted it up and she came to the city. And her mother-in-law saw that which she collected. And then she took out and gave to her mother-in-law that which she had left over from her meal, from that which satiated her. So this astounded Naomi that she should collect so much and even have a meal and have left over for her. Her mother-in-law said to her, "Eifo likat tayom, where did you collect today? Va'ana asis, where did you do? Where were you?" So even before she told her who it is, she says, "Whoever it was, whoever recognized you should be blessed." She told her mother-in-law, the one that she did with him. And she said, Boaz. The name of the man that I did today with him was Boaz. She didn't know who Boaz was. She was never told that Boaz was family. The Navi introduces it to us in the first pasuk, the first verse of Perek Beis of the second chapter. But Rus wasn't privy to that information, so she didn't know Boaz was a relative. Batomer Naomi lechalasa. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "Baruchu laHashem, he should be blessed to Hashem, asher lo azav chasdo atachayim esameisim, that he did not forsake his kindness." Again, the emphasis on chesed with those who are alive and with those who are dead. He took care of those who are alive, meaning you and me, and also those who are dead. He took care of his relatives of Machlon, Kilion, Elimelech, because he took care of us, and we are the widows of those who have passed away. Vatom, and then, that's the first thing she said to her. Then she added, Vatomer lot Naomi, Naomi said to her, Karov lanoish, the man is a relative of ours, Migoalenuhu, he is from our redeemers. Now we're going to have to explain this concept of redemption. This is going to be somewhat extensive. We're not quite ready to get into it. But she tells her she is a redeemer. Now, Naomi is planning. Naomi is the orchestrator. Naomi is the one behind the scenes who's going to make everything happen. The gears are turning in Naomi's mind. Right here. Rus has no plans, Boaz has no plans, but Naomi is the shadchan, and the shadchan always has plans. So Naomi, the gears are turning, the wheels are turning in her head. Vatome Rus HaMoavia, Rus the Moavia said to her, Gam ki amare la, he also told me, Imani arima shalitid bakin, you should stick with my young people, that is, you should stay in my fields, Adim kilu es kolakatsira shali, until they have completed all of my harvesting. That is, don't go to any other fields. Vatome Naomi al Rus Kalasa, Naomi said to Rus, her daughter in law, Tov biti ki seitzi im harosav, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young ladies. And they shouldn't bother you in other fields. So she stuck with Boaz's young ladies to collect until they finished the barley harvest, which is what they had started with. Remember, that was between Pesach and Shavuos, and also the wheat harvest, which means they've gone past Shavuos because the first of the wheat harvest is the Shtei HaLechem, is the beginning. Well, that's not really true, but that one of the first of the wheat harvest is for the carbon on Shavuos, but she went all the way to the end of the wheat harvest, and then Vateshev v'schamosa, and then she remained with her mother-in-law. She stayed with her mother-in-law.
When is the end of the Ketzira Chitim?
So the Ketzira Seorim or Ketzira Chitim, the two seasons, the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, is a 3-month span of time. It takes 3 months to complete both harvests in a normal year. 3 months. What's the significance of 3 months? Because when somebody converts, a giyara, so when a woman converts, she cannot marry for 3 months in order to ascertain whether she is expecting or not. Because if she isn't expecting, we need to know whether that child is from the time before she had converted or after she had converted. Now, what difference does it make? Either way, the child's going to be born after she converted, which means the child's going to be Jewish either way. But if the child was conceived prior to her conversion, then halachically, not biologically, but halachically, the child is not related to his father. Whoever the father is, that father would not halachically be related to this child, only biologically, not halachically. But if she conceived after she converted, then the child would be related to halachically to the father. So that's called havchana. That's called to differentiate, to see whether she is expecting or not. The same halacha applies to any woman who becomes widowed or divorced before she is able to remarry, has to wait at least 3 months in order to make sure that she is or isn't expecting from the first husband. If she is expecting, it's fine, but that we will know that it's from the first husband and not for the second husband. So here as well, for a convert, it is necessary to wait 3 months. So now that those two harvest times are over, the barley and the wheat, 3 months have passed, and now she is eligible. That's the significance of the 3 months. Now, we've talked about before, and let's emphasize it again, that the Megillah of Rus is all about chesed. All about kindness. That is what the theme, that is what the entire thing is about. The whole thing is to trace the roots of David HaMelech, of King David, the line of King David, and the line of King David comes from chesed. And it doesn't come from small acts of chesed, it comes from incredible self-sacrifice that is purely based on chesed. Ruth has already demonstrated huge chesed by going with Naomi, and that is what Boaz points out to her, that I've heard all that you did for your mother-in-law and for that you left behind everything else. So he acknowledges her incredible chesed. Right. But Boaz also performs a huge act of chesed over here. Boaz, as we will see later, has no thought whatsoever towards marrying Rus. He, as far as he's concerned, he's finished. There's nothing more that he can do. He married, he had, according to Chazal, he had 60 children. Whether that's literal or not, as we said before, is irrelevant, but he had a lot of children. They all predeceased him. His wife just died. He should be a broken man. He's 80 years old. He's at the end of his life. We know he's at the end of his life. In hindsight, we know he doesn't have much time to live. He knows he doesn't have much time to live. As far as he's concerned, the line of David HaMelech is not coming from him. it was a possibility it would come from him. He, of course, was hoping it would come from him, but it's not happening. So that's done. As far as he's concerned, how is it going to happen? Where is Hashem going to bring the line of David HaMelech from? That's not my concern. Unlike his uncle Elimelech, who took matters into his own hands and went to Moab, which was the wrong thing to do, but Elimelech did it altruistically, but it was still the wrong thing to do. Boaz remained behind and stayed with the people and saved the people and commiserated with them, strengthened them, cried with them. They stayed with the people. But the fact of the matter is, he lost everything. And as far as he's concerned, he's not going to be the one through which the line of David HaMelech is going to come. He has no, as we say, havamina. It doesn't enter his mind to marry Rus. Rus is 40 years younger than he is, and he's finished. He's done. Nevertheless, he extends huge amounts of chesed to Rus. Now, if you think about it, he could have been bitter. He could have had reason not to take care of Rus, after all, even though it wasn't Rus's fault. But you know how the human mind works. Elimelech made a mistake and went to Moab. And he brought his illustrious sons, Nachman and Kilian, with him. The greatest hope for the Jewish people for the future, for the line of David HaMelech. But they were wrong. And as a result, they were killed by Hashem. And now, one of the culprits, one of the ones who was the reason why they were all killed, Rus, is now back in Israel. That's not necessarily going to make her popular to Boaz. Not that it's Rus's fault, but you know how people are. People will have resentment towards the source of where things went wrong, even if it wasn't that person's fault. It's a very common thing that people will resent the person. And even if they don't resent the person, because intellectually they know it's not that person's fault, but emotionally they can't deal with it. Emotionally, I just can't talk to you. I can't look at you. That's a very common thing. It's not uncommon at all. But Boaz didn't have any feelings like that. Boaz recognized this is a Gioras, this is a woman who converted. It's not her fault about what happened. So Nebuch, it was the wrong choice. Rus may not even be the right person. The whole thing was a mistake. Elimelech never should have gone. Don't try to play God. Okay, so it was a mistake. It's not Rus's fault. And Rus has performed a huge act of chesed in following her mother-in-law back and taking care of her mother-in-law. So Boaz says, the least I can do is take care of Rus. And therefore, Boaz wants to take care of her in the most respectful and honorable way possible. He doesn't just give her tzedakah. He has his lads happen to forget a bundle. They happen to drop a bundle. Let her just call it and don't turn around. Don't look. Let her do what she does. He preserves her dignity as much as possible. And lets this happen. Boaz is losing money. He's losing money because of this. And he's doing it for this woman who, as far as he's concerned, he's not going to see her again. He's not going to have anything to do with her again. But he feels that it's the correct thing to do to extend chesed to Rus. It is a mesiras nefesh, it is a self-sacrifice on the part of Boaz to extend this chesed to Rus. Let's touch on this business of geula, of redemption. Now, I just want to warn you up front, we're not going to be able to cover it all yet because we haven't seen enough yet. But we do need a little bit of background before we go further. The halacha is, the rule is, that if a person in Israel, a person who owns land in Israel, becomes destitute, then they can sell their field. The person should not sell their field, their family field, unless they become destitute and don't have any other way of supporting themselves. But in that event, they can sell their field. Now, if they sell their field, how does it work? So, you're familiar with the Shemitah and Yovel cycle in Israel, that every seventh year is Shemitah, and you have to let the land lay fallow. And after seven Shemitahs, after 49 years, the 50th year is Yovel. And Yovel also you have to let the land lay fallow. These days there is Shemitah in Israel every seventh year, but there is no Yovel because Yovel requires there to be. It's a difference of opinion of exactly what's necessary for Yovel to take place, whether you need, exactly what do you need, but you need at least that most Jews live in Israel in order for there to be a Yovel. Some say you need most Jews from each tribe. In other words, each tribe, most of its tribe is in Israel. So today there's no Yovel, but there is Shemitah. But in the time of Boaz, there was Yovel, and there was Shemitah and Yovel. Now Yovel, the 50th year, in addition to being the year when you have to let the land lay fallow just like Shemitah, but other things happen in the Yovel year as well. One of the things that happens in the Yovel year is that slaves go free, Jewish slaves go free. Another thing that happens in the Yovel year is land that had been sold, family land that had been sold, goes back to the owner. So that therefore the price of land diminishes as you move through the Yovel years. If you're in the first year of the Yovel cycle, if I sell you my land in the first year of the Yovel cycle, you get to keep it for 49 years. So the price of that real estate is going to be pretty high. Whereas if I sell it to you with only 3 years left until the Yovel, well, you only get it for 3 years. You're not going to pay that much money for the land. So the price of real estate in Israel in the time when there is a Yovel will fluctuate primarily based on the Yovel cycle. Now, when the land is sold by a family member, there is a mitzvah upon the relatives to redeem that field. So that if Reuven sells his land because he's destitute, then his brother or his uncle or whoever else, his relatives, have a responsibility, if they can afford it, to purchase the land back on his behalf. To buy it back. That's the method.
At any time in those years?
Any time over the time that it was sold. Now, you can't buy it back for the first 2 years. Because when land is sold, the purchaser has the right to at least 2 years of harvests before the land can be bought back. After 2 years of harvests, then the original owner has the right to buy back. If somehow they made some money now since then and are able, they have money to have capital to buy it back, then he can buy it back without any penalty and the purchaser can't stop him from buying it back. And if the seller can't buy it back, then the relative of the seller also has the right to buy it back and the purchaser can't stop him. Now the purchaser is not going to lose any money, but you can't stop him from buying it back. That's the halacha in the Torah and Parshas Behar where it's spelled out. So essentially it becomes a required tzedakah. We know that in the rules of tzedakah, who should we give our money to first? Who are the primary recipients of our money? So there's the poor people of one's own city, the poor people of Eretz Yisrael, there's institutions, there's for weddings, there's for learning Torah, there's various things to give. There's orphans, there's various things to give money for. But what's the number one recipient?
Family.
Family. Mibasarcha lotis aleim, that a person should not hide themselves from their own flesh. There is a responsibility, first and foremost, to one's own family for tzedakah money. That's the number one recipient. The Torah has here a legislated required tzedakah in that if a relative of yours sells their field and you have the money to buy it back, you are required, it is a mitzvah, to buy it back on behalf of the relative. So that's essentially giving the relative tzedakah. That's what it is. It's buying the field back for their family. They couldn't afford the field. They had to sell it to make money. They got their money. So then 2 years later, if you have the capital to buy it back, you are required to buy it back. Now, if that's the case, think about it. Reuven has to sell his field. He's poor. He has to sell his field. His brother Shimon has the money to buy the field, to pay for the field. Now, one of two things can happen. Reuven could sell the field to a third party, and then 2 years later, Shimon is going to be required to buy it back. That's what's going to happen. Now, when Shimon buys it back, Shimon does keep the field until the Yovel, but it remains within the family. It stays within the family. It's there. It's not. Doesn't go off to a third party who's not a family member. It's still within the family. But Shimon's going to have to buy back the field. So it was much more streamlined to leave out the middleman. And why should Reuven sell it to a third party, and then 2 years later Shimon's going to have to buy it back from the third party? That's convoluted. You may as well just eliminate the third party and let Shimon buy it directly from Reuven.
Right.
That'll just stop that whole, right? And that's what ended up happening. Because of the way the Torah structures it, that's typically what happened. Now, it could happen that Shimon didn't have the money when Reuven sold the field, and then Shimon got money later and then bought the field back. That could happen. But if Shimon had money at the time that Reuven's ready to sell, then the most likely candidate, the most likely purchaser would be his brother or his uncle or his cousin. That would be the most common thing to happen. So Naomi is telling Rus, you should know that Boaz is a Goel of ours. He's a relative of ours, which means he's a redeemer, which means he is someone who would be required to buy the land back after 2 years after we sell it. And therefore, he will be one of the primary people in line to purchase our fields, which Naomi needed to sell in order to keep themselves afloat. They were poor. They couldn't work their field. They didn't have the capital to pay for harvesters, for people to plow the field. They didn't have any money. So they needed to sell the field. And she's telling Ruth, I want you to be aware that Boaz is mi goalenu. He is from those who is of our redeemers. He is my first cousin. And therefore, he is perhaps not the first one in line, as we'll see, but he is of the people who will be responsible to buy our land, which means that when we put it up for sale, he's going to be one of the first people we're going to speak to and to buy the field. Now, that in and of itself has nothing to do with marrying Rus. Mm-hmm. It's just right at this point, with Naomi telling Rus about it, that makes him someone who is going to come into our lives with purchasing the field. So you collecting in his field, that makes sense. That fits in perfectly, because he may end up buying our field, in which case you'll end up collecting in our own field, which he's going to have. Like, it'll make a lot of sense. Like, we're going to be here, right? He's going to be. It all works out very nicely that he may actually end up buying our field. But this has nothing to do with marrying her, because the Torah doesn't talk about marrying the woman who owns the field. That has nothing to do with this. This is just selling the field and buying it back. But that's what it means to be a goel. That's what it means to be a redeemer. It is not by accident that word is being used over here, since ultimately David HaMelech is also the goel. He's the goel because he's the redeemer. He is the melech. He's the king. Obviously Hashem is the goel, but in terms of flesh and blood, he is the goel. The Mashiach, who comes from David HaMelech, is going to be the one who's going to be goel us, who's going to redeem us to take us out of exile. Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who was goel the Jewish people from Mitzrayim, from Egypt. That word here is going to become a very important word, as we're going to see as we move along. So that is what the concept of goel is. We will need to review this a little bit and apply it more specifically when we go through the rest of the Parak Gimel, the third chapter. The Torah's expectation of land in Eretz Yisrael is that no one gets it permanently except for the original owner. And don't bother developing it, because you're not going to keep it. Don't build a casino on that land. You're not going to keep it. It's going right back.
What happens if you build a house there?
If it's your own field, you build a house. If it's field that you bought, you would not build a house on that land. You would use it only for harvesting. You'd only use it for what you can use it temporarily. Okay. Now, we're going to continue over here. I know it's towards the end of the class and we're up to the end of the chapter, but because we have still a huge amount to cover, you have no idea how much we still have to cover. And we only have two more classes after tonight, so we're going to forge ahead. Vatomer la Naomi Chamosa. Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, Biti, my daughter, halo avakesh lach manoach asher yitav lach. I would seek for you what's that? Contentment. Okay, that would be good for you. In other words, I want you to have a future. I want you to have a place in the future. a place where you will be you'll be able to settle down that will be good for you. So Naomi here has hatched a plan, and she's about to introduce it to Rus, and things are about to move very, very quickly. From here to the end of the Megillah, well, not quite to the end of the Megillah, but almost to the end of the Megillah, is going to be 2 days.
Wow.
And 2 days from here to the end of the Megillah, and things are going to move very rapidly, although we have to develop it, so it's going to take us a couple of weeks. V'atah, now, hello, Boaz, modatanu, Boaz has, Boaz is our relative. Boaz is the one who is our relative. Asher ha'yisa sarosav, that you were with his young ladies. Hinehu zoreh es goren ha'seorim ha'layla. Behold, he is winnowing the granary of barley this evening. He's going to winnow the barley granary this evening. How did Naomi know that? I don't know how Naomi knew that. I don't know if it was a typical thing that this was the time you did it, but she knew that he was going to winnow the granary of barley this evening. Virachat vasacht, you should bathe and you should anoint yourself with oil, which was a common thing to do. Visamt simosayach alayach, and place your clothing upon you. This means your Shabbos clothing upon you. Viaradat hagoren, and go down to the granary. Al tivadi lo ish, do not make yourself known to the man. Ad kalosol le'achov v'lishtos, until he finishes eating and drinking. Don't let him know that you're there. I want you to sneak in. V'hi v'shachvo, and it will be when he goes to sleep. V'yadat esam akom asher yishkav sham, you should know the place that he's going to sleep. Again, don't let him know that you're there, but you should be able to figure out where he's going to sleep. Now, that means that Naomi knew that Boaz was not only going to be winnowing the granary that evening, he was going to actually sleep there in the granary or in the field. Now, you should know where he's sleeping. Uvas, and you should come. Vigilis margilosav, you should uncover his feet. Vishachavd, and you should lie down, you should sleep. Vuhu yagidlach, esasher tasin, and he will tell you what you should do. This is perhaps the strangest set of instructions in the entire Tanakh that anybody gave anybody. It's not just strange because it appears to be inappropriate, and the secular people who look at this think that more went on than actually went on. Nothing went on. The only thing she told her to do was exactly what we just read. Find out where he's sleeping, go there, uncover his feet, and lie down. And then he'll tell you what to do. So it is really, really bizarre. What exactly is Naomi trying to do over here? It's bizarre, the instructions are bizarre, and it's even more bizarre because Naomi seems to be setting up an inappropriate situation, something which is sure to cause problems. You're sending a single woman to go and find the place where a single man is lying down, and then you're to uncover his feet and lie down. What exactly was Naomi trying to make happen over here? It certainly looks inappropriate. And you would think that she would have had some more...
finesse.
Yeah, that's a good word. More finesse in making this happen right. So what exactly is she doing? But Rus doesn't ask questions. Vatomer Eilal, Rus responded to her, Kol asher tomri Eilai aseh, whatever you tell me I will do. So Rus is obedient and will do whatever it is that Naomi tells her to do, even though it appears to be extremely bizarre. However, Rus doesn't actually do everything Naomi told her to do. Look very carefully. Vatemrit ha-goren, she went down to the granary. Vatat kachol asher tzivat ha-chamosa, she did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. So this is actually slightly different than what her mother-in-law told her to do. Her mother-in-law told her to bathe, smear yourself with oil, put on your Shabbos clothing, and then go down to the granary. And she didn't do that. She first went down to the granary and then did what her mother-in-law told her to do. She didn't get herself all done up until she got down to the granary. Chazal tell us because she said that if I do it in the order my mother-in-law told me to do it, which is to first make myself up and then go down to the granary, people who see me will assume that I have illicit purposes in mind. And so instead, she first went down to the granary just as a poor woman, bringing with her what she needed, and then she got herself ready the way her mother-in-law told her to get ready. The Chazal say from here that Tein lechacham v'yechcham od, give to a wise person and that person will become even more wise. That Rus was a very wise woman and was able to tailor the instructions of Naomi without altering them in any significant way, but making them even better. So she was astute enough to understand that this detail of when to get ready was not going to affect the plan, even though the plan itself was bizarre. But nevertheless, she understood that this wouldn't affect the plan, and therefore she had the right, and not only the right, it was appropriate for her to change the order of how it was done. That's
what did she do? She
first went to the granary, and then she put on her Shabbos clothing and made herself all nice.
Why would he be doing this on his own as an 80-year-old man who's a big gadol hador? You know, he's going out to and they have service.
That's an excellent question. Why would Boaz be doing this on his own? He's an 80-year-old man. He's the gadol hador. Wouldn't he have his servants or his lads, his workers? Would they do it? But Boaz did it himself. Okay. So it's 9:00. We're going to lead off with this next time. Let me tell you what we're going to lead off with. We're going to lead off with trying to make sense of Naomi's plan, of what Boaz was doing. We're trying to make sense of where this was happening. There's a lot of things over here that we will be able to put our finger on, and a lot of this will fall into place once we know these things. Now, we won't understand every detail. There's always more room for greater understanding. But there are very significant pieces of information which, once they are in place, a lot of this will make a lot more sense. And that's where we're headed. And of course, that we have to see what actually happens when the plan is implemented, when Ruth actually goes to Boaz, and Boaz wakes up in the middle of the night and all that, what exactly occurs, that's going to play a big role. So the first thing we're going to have to do when we start next week is read the rest of the Perek. We can't start here because we need more information from the psukim, from the verses, before we're able to deal with it. And then we're going to try to put some pieces in place.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.